Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, nice to see you again. I'm going to see you here later this week as we do a behind the scenes on how the show is put together during the pledge drive.
I'm looking forward to it. It's a fun way to live out this aspect of almsgiving during Lent and inviting people to participate in our pledge drive.
And how is your Lent going? We only have a few more weeks till Easter.
You know, it has been a fruitful Lent so far. Thanks be to God.
All right, good. So we're going to get going this week with a
penitential topic, I'm assuming.
No. A debate.
Maybe it is. Debate. Okay.
So there was a security conference recently in Munich where Secretary of State Marco Rubio invoked Dante, Gothic cathedrals, the democratic form of government, and the university system, among others, when he said that the U.S. and Europe share a cultural identity built on Christianity. Hmm. In response to this speech that Rubio gave, New York Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez responded by describing Rubio's claim of a shared Western culture as thin. AOC claimed that culture is fluid. It's a fluid, evolving thing that responds to the conditions that we live in. She said instead we should focus on the material foundations in the class struggle. What does that sound like to you?
That sounds a lot like Mao Zedong and Stalin and a few other rather Marxist. Interesting characters from the last 150 years.
So in response to those statements, Bishop Robert Barron weighed in. He warned that AOC's comment is evidence of encroaching Marxism shared by younger Democratic political leaders. Barron quotes Marx as saying that, quote, culture is simply epiphenomenal, is an epiphenomenal superstructure on top of the economic substructure, and don't be distracted, therefore, by the culture, because it's just protecting the economics at the base. That's what Marx said.
That is bizarre.
That's what Marx said. And that sounds an awful lot like what AOC just said.
That's exactly what she just said.
So Barron points out that the very first thing Marxists have always done when they gain power is to attack what?
Culture.
Religion.
Well, culture and, and religion, they remove any signs of the past cultural icons or and religious symbols. That's the first thing that they attack. They're always anti-religious and especially anti-Christian.
Yeah, so Barron praised Rubio's worldview. He observed that the root of all culture is religion, in that culture is tightly linked to cult.
Mm-hmm.
That means that all the things that we stand, all the things that we value stand in relation to that which we value most highly, which is religion.
And a relationship with God.
Yeah, so it's interesting. By the way, if you watched his, I didn't read this, I watched a video of his response, and it was so easy the way he handled the topic.
And articulate. I would compare, if the two of them ever debated between Bishop Barron and AOC, it would be like, you know, a Mike Tyson fighting against me. I mean, there's just no contest.
Right.
Intellectually. I mean, I watched a couple of things of her rebuttal speech, and she couldn't even gather
thoughts. Yeah, that's where I was going.
Mumbo jumbo.
Yeah.
And this is, unfortunately, what's in the mind of a lot of people who I think are well-intentioned on the left, but they just don't have clear ideas.
No doubt, well-intentioned, but not grounded in faith.
Not at all, and not grounded in reality. And I think this junction between their ideas that are ideological and built on sand and just ignoring the facts of life and of God, and it is very problematic.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires.
The Wall Street Journal did a piece on the encroaching surveillance state of security cameras. Nancy Guthrie, the missing mother of today's show, co-host Savannah Guthrie, had a Google Nest camera on her house, but on her front door, but no subscription. Yet law enforcement was still able to access and share a clip of the alleged kidnapper dressed in a ski mask at her front door. Nest owners were surprised to learn that even if you aren't paying for cloud storage, your recordings could still be found floating around Google servers.
Interesting.
Then there was the Ring camera Super Bowl ad, with a feature that can analyze footage from cameras around your neighborhood to help find a missing dog.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, there was a large negative response to this ad by the public, and Ring Crab walked back on their partnership with Flock Safety and said the feature would no longer be used.
Hmm.
So, currently, 30% of U.S. residences with internet access own a security camera or video doorbell. Most home security camera makers have access to your footage and, when legally compelled, can share it with law enforcement. So many are disturbed by these videos being viewed by anybody but them. What are your thoughts about this surveillance state?
Well, it opens up a lot of questions. I mean, if they can tap into the cameras that are on these Nest or Ring doorbells, can they also tap into cameras that are on people's computers?
Or TVs
or your phones? And the answer is yes, they can. So there's an incredible amount of data which is available, and that does open a lot of questions for privacy. And generally, the United States has been much further behind Europe on privacy laws for access to these type of materials. So from a Catholic perspective, what can we say about this? I think we have to respect the privacy of individuals. I think that there's also a legitimate case sometimes for law enforcement to use resources that are available to try to solve crimes and to protect the populace. So it's not an either or. It's like, all right, let's try to find the right balance in the midst.
Well, there's
of
no
this.
Going back. It's not like we're going
right.
to right. So there really does need to be a managed approach going forward about accessing somebody's Alexa.
Sure.
Or we've talked about this before. You shouldn't be bringing your phone into the confessional.
All right. Yeah, that's simple things like that where we do need to try to protect the privacy of individuals and be aware of just kind of situational awareness.
But do you think there's any kind of overarching Catholic principle about surveillance, whether it's like if you were to ask the AI version of the catechism, would it tell you surveillance good or bad?
Again, I think it's a balancing. You have to respect the human dignity is one of the bedrock principles of Catholic social teaching. So respecting the dignity of human persons, and part of that is respecting the privacy of individuals.
Which I would think then the answer would be bad. I mean, my intuition is that it's bad. I mean, I don't want to be on camera. I mean, that's like when I'm out, you know, I don't let anybody track my phone. Like my wife has asked me, like, you know, let me do the Life 360 or whatever it's called. I'm like, I don't want to know where you are and I don't want you to know where I am. I just don't want to be tracked, not because I'm doing anything, just because I don't want to be thinking about the fact that, you know.
Well, see, I'm kind of the opposite. I don't mind if someone looks and sees where I'm at. I'll share my location with other people. I mean, I have to live as a priest. I have to live a fairly public life in the sense that, like, everything I do at some point is going to come to light. And so
yeah,
I got to live my life.
But you know,
with
like even our kids, you know, these parents are always kind of tracking. I don't want to know, especially in my college age or older. I don't want to know what they're up to. You know, I really don't.
Well, you're the opposite of a lot of parents. A lot of parents get hyper controlling and they want to know every movement of their kids. So there's different personalities out there too, Chris. So I think finding the proper balance, which will, you know, it'll be different in different circumstances. I do think we have to be careful of parents who become too controlling or a state that becomes too controlling. I think there is something to that.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
Do you remember 2 years ago when Kansas City Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker in a commencement speech at Benedictine College encouraged female graduates to value motherhood?
Of course I do, yeah.
Right. So
very insightful talk.
And so Butker said, among other things, quote, "Some of you may go on to lead successful careers in the world, but I would venture to guess that the majority of you are most excited about your marriage and the children you will bring into this world." He continued, quote, "I'm beyond blessed with the many talents God has given me, but it cannot be overstated that all my success is made possible because a girl I met in band class back in middle school would convert to the faith, become my wife, and embrace one of the most important titles of all, homemaker." So now, do you know who Cam Newton is?
Yep, NFL player as right. well, like Harrison Butker. Well, is he still playing in the NFL?
No, he's a former NFL quarterback and he's current sports analyst with a podcast where he recently said, quote, "A woman's value gets lowered the more children that they have," unquote. He indicated in his conversation with one of his mothers, he has 9 kids with 3 moms. Mm. So he indicated in conversation with one of the mothers that he was encouraging her not to date anyone going forward who wants you to have more children. So for context, Harrison Butker has 3 children with his wife. Yeah, Newton has 9 kids, 5 with one woman and 4 with 2 others. So whose comments do you think provoked media outrage and whose comments got a pass?
I don't even need to answer that question. But again, we're talking about what the secular media, because they've imbibed a worldview that is very anti-Christian and anti-life. And it's oftentimes feminist overtones, like that the value of a woman is demeaned by having more children. No, I mean, I work with women all the time, and the happiest women are the ones who have children, have a happy home life, have a good relationship with their husband. These 3 women that Cam Newton's been with, he's not married. Is he married to even one of them at this point? I mean, to be abandoned by a guy and treated like a piece of meat, that's not fair. That's not respecting the dignity of women. And I guarantee you, those women are probably not very happy.
Yeah, I mean, what's the demeaning part? Is is them having more children or him abandoning his responsibilities as father?
Yeah, and that's the crazy double standard that we have in the world today.
But of course, you know, there was an uproar, which is why you knew about you and I. I probably wouldn't have known who the Chiefs kicker is, but now, you know, I'm acutely aware of who the Chiefs kicker is because of the media uproar against his comments, which, you know, I read over and over and I was like, I don't see anything wrong with what he said.
Well, it's completely contrary to a lot of the ideology that's being promoted. And interesting, we've talked about several topics of communism and Marxist ideas. A lot of the modern feminist movement is actually rooted in Marxism. And so when they look at this relationship between men and women as a oligarchy or a suppression or some sort of a, you know, demeaning
of women. Divided into oppressed and oppressor.
Yeah. And if you enter into that mindset, then it totally destroys relationships between men and women. It's very, very toxic, I should say.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. This is a topic that we've talked about in past episodes, but there's been an update on. So a U.S. appeals court has cleared the way for a Louisiana law requiring poster size displays of the Ten Commandments in public classrooms to take effect.
Okay.
The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals voted 12-6 to lift a block that the lower court placed on the law, the 2024 law. The court said that they're not saying that this law is constitutional, but that it's too early to decide because the law hasn't been fully implemented yet, and the courts need to see real-world facts, i.e. how large and how prominent these posters are, whether they're used in teaching, what other documents are posted, et cetera, before they can make a decision. So, you know, I think this, we've talked, I think, in the last episode when we addressed this, that that the display in a public school, we're talking about public school, I think it's perfectly acceptable, especially as if it's not the basis and center of classroom teaching and if it's used in conjunction with other influential historical documents. Any new thoughts from you about this and about how the court is wanting to see how they use it? I mean, do you think that it should be there regardless in public schools?
I think it's part of the bedrock of Western civilization.
And I agree with that, but I think practically speaking, in order for it to continue, that this juxtaposition of this document along with, say, the Declaration of Independence or the Magna Carta or some other important historical documents then, you know, takes the heat off of this being an establishment of religion in schools, even though it is the foundation for most of our laws today.
Yeah, I think it's a very political move by the court to try to thread the needle here and let it continue on. But I think we got to go back to a deeper appreciation for what we stand for as a society. I mean, a culture and a civilization exists based on the values that it espouses. So I think this is where we have to decide as a society, do we want to take the Marxist declaration as the foundation for our society where we create class structure and envy and dissension? Or do we want to take the Magna Carta? Or do we want to take the Ten Commandments? But these are conversations we should be having on a cultural level. I think what's happened is that the ACLU, achieved its landmark Supreme Court decision years ago and forced religion out of public schools. Because up until, the first 150 years of our nation's history, it was established that we are based on Christian principles. And then that was discarded in the 1950s with that Supreme Court decision. And we've been reaping the effects ever since. Now, that has...
Let's talk about reality here. Okay, mm-hmm. if we said that it would be legal for schools in Louisiana to, in big bold,
posters,
mm-hmm. Post the Ten Commandments everywhere and not have any other historical documents.
Look at any classroom; they've got all kinds of documents posted up in there.
I know, but I'm saying though, let's say that this is the attack that they took. I can see this just not going to last. There's just no mm-hmm. way that the courts are going to, let that stand. Whereas if you let that document amongst other historical documents, then I think it's like, okay, this
makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know the last time you've been into a classroom, or you got kids still in high school, but I mean, any classroom you walk into, especially at the elementary school level, there's all kinds of posters on the walls.
Right.
So to have another one as a reference point, especially for something that is so bedrock for Western civilization, it's a no-brainer.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. I found an interesting opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal where they ask, quote, when is a tax not a tax, unquote. So their answer is when it's a taking, like what is proposed in California with their billionaire tax initiative. So the ballot initiative calls for a one-time, retroactive 5% tax on the net worth of the state's billionaires. They argue this tax is an uncompensated take. The Wall Street Journal does. The Wall Street Journal is arguing that this tax is an uncompensated taking, or at least a deprivation of property without due process, contrary to the 5th and 14th Amendments. So although taxes are generally lawful, they say it isn't true of everything called a tax. So they bring up an example where you have a hypothetical Bill Gates tax that imposes an income tax on 100% of Bill Gates' income and no one else. So in form, it's called a tax, but in reality, that's a confiscation.
Mm-hmm.
So taxes are furthest from takings when they are 1, prospective, 2, recurring, and 3, equal in their burdens. Or if not equal, then sufficiently graduated to distribute their burdens widely and proportionately. So taxes are allowed to be, without being unconstitutional, retroactive, and that's not necessarily uncommon, and they don't have to be recurring, but all of those three, when you get further from all those three things that I just mentioned, prospective, recurring, and equal, you get closer to confiscation. So I hadn't really thought about the basis of tax before reading this article. I thought mm-hmm. those three guiding principles, this article was written by a law professor from Columbia.
Mm.
I thought those three guiding principles were very good. What do you think about that?
No, I think that's a great debate that needs to happen in our society for an understanding of the underpinnings of taxation. Although at the same time, I think that any form of taxation is actually a form of taking. I mean, that's just the reality. I mean, would you willingly pay tax on gasoline if you didn't have to? Like if it was voluntary, like you know how they have at the kiosk when you're checking out. Do you want to round up, 75 cents to make it round off to help the Ronald McDonald House? I mean, no, I don't, because I don't like that charity, whatever one it is.
Right.
Or I don't want to give in that way. I want to give voluntarily. I want to give according to the needs. So every tax is really somewhat involuntary, and in that sense, it is a taking. And I think when we're lacking a conversation as a society about what we want our money to go to, I mean, that's the foundation of our republic. It was no taxation without representation.
Right.
But I think we've lost a little bit of the sense of what's being taken, why it's being taken, what are we contributing to. And then when you have government, which lacks accountability, or, we talked recently about that case of the...
Which is why you don't want to just
alcohol
round,
program in San Francisco, wasting people's money.
Yeah. And that's why I don't want to go round up for whatever, because I don't know what they're
What's
doing with this
to?
Money. Yeah.
Yeah.
How efficiently or inefficiently they're spending it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and whose pockets it's lining.
Right. Yeah. But the concept of a tax, it's absolutely necessary if for only... one reason and one reason only, for the providing of a national defense. I mean, otherwise, how are you going to fund such a program? So, yes, everything is, everyone is a taking.
In history. I mean, look at, you know, George III, I think it was George III, who got into trouble in because he actually borrowed money in order to carry out the wars.
Right.
And then they created all kinds of fiscal problems for the country.
Right. And that's
when he had to put in the taxes, right. More exorbitant taxes, because he'd fallen into debt.
We're doing that, too. We're borrowing, too.
Look at our national debt.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous at this point.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
The Trump administration recently rolled back the greenhouse gas regulatory framework of the 29 Obama EPA endangerment finding that gases such as carbon dioxide and methane posed risks to public health. Since manufacturers no longer face penalties for high emission fleets, several have scaled back their production of EV vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So this brings to mind questions for me about creation care, where humans are stewards or trustees rather than owners, and that the earth belongs to God and humans are simply managers charged with its well-being, versus dominion theology, where humanity is told
Lords
in Genesis,
it over. Mm-hmm.
Yes, to subdue the earth and have dominion over everything and to use natural resources as gifts. So if you look at it as just those two counter factors, how would you fall on this this idea of regulating carbon dioxide and the other things that came about this endangerment?
Well, actually, I didn't see the clear distinction between the two positions that you put forward, because at least in my own mindset, you know, God has created all the world. He needs to put us as stewards of his creation. So we do need to care for and protect that which God has given us. And it would be foolish for us to, I don't know, cut down all the trees in a forest and not plant trees elsewhere, because we're taking away from future generations. So I think a healthy ecology fits perfectly well with Catholic theology and a Catholic approach, Catholic worldview. I think when we start to see ourselves just as lording it over and we can do anything we want to, you know, strip mining or removing forests or polluting the oceans and dumping trash there, I think it's problematic. And I think this is where Pope Francis, to his credit, in Laudato Si, gives some really good insights on what is a Catholic approach to caring for our common
home. Right, so in the extreme, though, if you had to answer the question, which one takes precedence over the other? I mean, just as
you
alluded to.
Clearly, you have to have a hierarchy of values. And man is more important than a fish. And so in this way of approaching things, we can recognize that we have a capacity as human beings to think about things, to reason. Animals don't. We shouldn't make them suffer unnecessarily, but we can eat them. That's a proper hierarchy of
right,
values.
Right, but is it to assert dominion while being a good steward, or is it to preserve and protect while asserting dominion? Which one comes first?
I think that if you don't preserve and protect while asserting dominion, you're jeopardizing your own future.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's a smart way to approach
it. The smart way is that you're first going to assert dominion, but the but is you have to do it responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Chris, I'm not really seeing your distinction very clearly here. Can you explain that a little bit more?
So what I'm trying to get at is the idea of some folks to always make environmental laws more restrictive versus those that want to take away all environmental laws.
Yeah, and this is a typical case where the extremes are not a manifestation of virtue. We need to have laws in place to protect the environment, yes, but at the same time, if those laws are impinging upon people's ability to do business, it's going to be detrimental to human beings. So finding a healthy balance and having actual dialogue between people to find what makes sense in our circumstances.
Yeah, and I think of the example of, say, the Sierra Club. Have they ever been in favor of something that would be potentially damaging to the environment?
I don't know, but that's an example of someone who's driven by an ideology which doesn't recognize the value of human beings. And they look upon humans as invaders on the planet or, you know, right, destructive of every other species. And so they want to get rid of human beings.
Right, because they don't believe in dominion theology.
Yeah, and so there's an ideology there which is unhealthy, and it doesn't lead to construct dialogue about what's best for us as human beings and for the planet.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
During Trump's State of the Union address, he announced the awarding of the Presidential Medal of Freedom to the goalie for USA Hockey after the dramatic overtime win for USA and the gold medal that came with it.
Pretty exciting finish.
And I listened to the broadcast on the radio because I was driving and was fired up when Jack Hughes scored the winning goal to give the U.S. the 2-1 win over Canada for the first men's hockey gold medal since the famous 1980 Miracle on Ice Olympics. I find it interesting, though, thinking about the Olympics and the weaponization of the medal table. So all of the U.S. media outlets in both the Summer and Winter Olympics rank countries by total medals instead of what the rest of the world does, which is ranked by gold medals. So in this Olympics, it didn't matter because the U.S. finished second in both gold medals and total medals.
Right.
I think the rest of the world, first thing is I think the rest of the world has it right that the only thing that matters is the gold medal winner. I mean, we don't celebrate the loser of the Super Bowl or the World Series ever. Okay. But what I want to ask you about is the concept of the Olympics serving as a proxy war. By that, I mean, it's a way for nations to assert superiority over other nations in a peaceful battlefield. And I know that the modern Olympics was not supposed to be a war replacement, but it did rhyme with that, as the French founder thought that sport creates better people and better people make fewer wars. So my question to you is, what do you think God would say about our sports nationalism?
Well, I think he would say about sports in general that it's a good thing and there's a good outlet for people. I think about the nationalism. I think there's a unhealthy pride at times when it's vaunting over others. I mean, you tell your kids when they're playing sports in the field, be a good winner, which means you don't humiliate your opponent. You don't yell in their face. And there's taunting rules even in football now that if you do that, you get a penalty. So I think we should be exercising perhaps a little bit more circumspection and good sportsmanship on a national level, too.
Well, the other part of the Olympics that I found interesting was the figure skater Alyssa Liu, who won gold medal for the U.S. for the first time in many decades, or I don't know, I forget when it was when we last won. But she had quit the sport at age 16, saying that she had accomplished everything that she wanted to do. And then she comes back and she's not some pressure laden favorite anymore, a prodigy.
She was just having fun.
Right. But after she claimed the gold, social media lit up with the headlines like how life looks when you risk it all to be fully yourself. But then the National Catholic Register turns around and says, I think they're missing the point, that her story is not about risking everything to reinvent herself. It's about refusing to let achievement define her and the courage to live a life not dictated by applause. I love that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful insight.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.